Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. We are live in Los Angeles, hour 3. It is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike's Subs. Be a sub above. An hour ago, we had Quentin Richardson on. He told one of my 5 favorite stories in the history of the show. We'll put him on the podcast today. It was an outrageously funny story. You just don't realize, this is why I've always defended athletes. You and I out of college can decide where we want to go. For a college athlete, the better he is, the harder he's worked, he is punished and sent to a worse franchise. Can you imagine putting all the time at Harvard Law or University of Virginia Law School or Michigan Law, and you're the top of your class, and you go to a worse law firm where the partners are idiots, it's dysfunctional, nobody lies, backstabbing. That's what pro athletes go through. And also, as an attorney, you only have like 9 years to make your money.
You also have to share pens.
Share pens.
And desks.
So, I mean, that's why I did. Well, they make a lot of money. Well, they make generational money if they're good with their second and third contracts.
Well, I think it's the money part is significant. I get that from fans. But I think it's the expectations to be successful in these environments where you're practicing at a junior college and you have to get in your car with a towel wrapped around you so you can go shower, which is not sanitary.
Name another industry outside of pro sports where the harder you work in college, the worse place you are forced to work. That's why I support pro athletes. They get these off of Donald Sterling, Marge Schott. The guy in Cleveland, Dan Gilbert. Is that right? Yeah, Dan Gilbert's
like the Cavs. Yeah,
every time
or
LeBron,
T. Liz's story that TJ told us about the Bengals having to share jockstraps. It's like a movie.
In one point in Cincinnati, I could be incorrect. I think I'm right because I think I read it years ago in Sports Illustrated. There was a legendary high school football program in Cincinnati. I'm not sure. I mean, it's still there. The high school's there. I'm not sure if they're as good as they once were. It was called Moeller High. Moeller. It was a great high school. It was like the best high school football program in America. I believe they had an indoor practice facility before the Cincinnati Bengals. That's insane. TJ Hushmanzada, they would throw jocks in the middle of the floor. And you had to go, you'd be a quarterback, you're wearing the tight ends yesterday. That's just sharing underwear. It's gross.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hawks-Bucks Eastern Conference Finals Game 5 is featured on the free-to-play Fox Bet Super 6 app. Scan the QR code below, download the app, and answer 6 questions about tomorrow's game for your shot to win $1,000.
By the way, I just saw a story. LeBron James has that movie Space Jam. They had a big premiere and stuff, and he went out and partied with like Hollywood people. Mm-hmm. And I don't party with Hollywood people. They stay up way too late for me. It's really a scene that I'm not comfortable with.
Except for the get-together. You go to get-togethers.
What are those?
Didn't you? You said you were at like a fancy party the other
day. That wasn't a party. That was dinner and a cocktail dinner. Okay. But the one thing when LeBron apparently partied with Don Cheadle, and I would bet good money that Don Cheadle at 11:15 says, "Gentlemen, it's been a great night. I'm going to hit the hay. A big day tomorrow." He seems responsible.
You think he says?
Don Cheadle Don Cheadle goes to bed early by celebrity. He's very, very good at what he does. He's an adult. I don't know what we should do a segment called "What Time Does John Cheadle Go to Bed?" But I think he's one of those Hollywood people that goes to bed at a response.
There are those kind of people out here, though.
Like, responsible people.
Yeah, that they've just been doing this long enough that they're like, or they'll do the like walkthrough move where like they come to the party, like say hello, you know, like they're seen, and like, all right, we're out of here. and like just...
Doesn't Don Cheadle seem responsible?
He seems very responsible.
So you're not going to see Don Cheadle at 4:45 waving a big tequila bottle down Hollywood Boulevard.
Where were they? I didn't see where the party was. I am not cool enough to go to these parties.
LeBron's got a big fancy house, so...
So if it was a house party, then yeah, you got to be...
But I guarantee even then, Cheadle said, King James, 11:15.
I don't imagine that LeBron James parties lead to too much irresponsible behavior.
He's got kids,
and that's not LeBron's like brand,
right? Or Don Cheadle's.
Yes,
his brand is Betterly hit movies. Dan Wojcicki's been covering. He's covered everybody. Clippers beat writer for the Lakers, L.A. Times, Clippers, Orange County Register. Covered the NBA for nearly a decade, so he's covered everybody in Southern California. And he'll be there tonight. Clippers, Suns, biggest game I would argue in the history of the Clippers. I think it's the biggest game for the Suns for everybody on that roster except Jay Crowder, who's been in the finals. And Dan Wojcicki's now joining us live. So, you know, sometimes I get vibes off of games, and I'm like, ooh, I feel good about this one. What is your vibe for tonight's game?
Well, it might be affected. I was out till 3 in the morning last night with Don Cheadle. We had a real wild night. I feel good about where the Clippers are at, Colin, and it's a weird, as someone who's been around that franchise intermittently over the last decade, that's an odd feeling to have. I just feel like they've kind of found a formula in this series. They found a formula in every series so far. Their experiences mattered. Their poise has mattered. Their depth and their versatility has all mattered. And they're coming home. And to win tonight, I really think the role players need to have big games. And that's kind of what role players do, generally speaking, at home, is they play well. And after sort of that shooting abomination we saw in game 4 at Staples Center, you wouldn't think you'd see that again. This has been a very good shooting team all season. So kind of the door seems a little bit open for them to force a game 7. And then, you know, who knows what happens.
You know, it's interesting. Paul George, I went to this yesterday. If you look at game 7 against Dallas, game 6 against Utah, the last game he played, which could have been, you know, Dunzo, you're out. He's been giving you 44 minutes, shot the ball well, gives you a little bit of everything. I do feel like he's broken through a little bit of that playoff disappointment label. I kind of feel like he's been the best guy on the floor in a lot of these series in the key moments. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, you should never give yourself a nickname, Colin. That just sets up all the problems, first of all. Like, none of this – so much of the Paul George slander comes from the fact that he called himself Playoff P, right? If he had just been like, no, my name's Paul, we'd be all right probably on some of this stuff. But I think that he has been fantastic. I do worry a little bit about wear and tear with him. You can watch and you can tell early where his energy levels are. Is he attacking the basket? I think that's a huge thing in this game, getting to the foul line, attacking DeAndre Ayton, maybe even playing DeAndre Ayton off the court. The Clippers haven't really been able to do that. Ayton's done such a good job in this postseason, you know, staying out of foul trouble, and has been wildly effective when Phoenix has been able to go to him. But, you know, the number that I like most about Paul George in these last four games has been his work on the glass, Colin. Over 10 rebounds in each of the last four games, I think averaging almost like 14 or something like that. To me, that's effort. That's will to win. That's where that shows up, right? And I think when we watch Paul George play, he plays with such ease. It's sort of his on-court style. He's very, very smooth. And sometimes that reeks of lack of urgency. Watch the rebounding numbers. That's where urgency and effort shows up. And he's been a terrific alpha for this team when there are other guys not able to be on the court.
I thought the Suns looked really tight last game, especially early. Were you surprised by that?
No. I think that's sort of how these playoff series work, right? As you know, you mentioned sort of my resume. I've seen the Clippers blow some 3-1 leads in person, and game 5 is usually where it starts.
Yeah.
I remember the Clippers Rockets series from, I think it was like 2014 or something like that. The Clippers didn't show up with any energy in game 5. The Suns wanted to keep their season alive. They played with great energy, and you know, they start to build a little momentum. I think you know what I saw last year in the bubble. Same thing with Denver. Denver could have folded down 3-1 against the Clippers. Clippers are up big in the second half. Denver doesn't fold. They push forwards. They build some momentum. And I think, you know, what you saw with the Suns was a team that didn't respond very well to the Clippers' sort of sense of urgency and desperation. Monty Williams said it after the game. You know, he said it after game 3, to be honest. He said the same thing, and the Clippers did it in game 3. And that, to me, is, you know, the first 5 to 10 minutes of this game. The Clippers have proven, Colin, that they can play uphill, that they can come from behind.
Yeah.
And they've proven that this postseason. But can they, if they put pressure on the Suns early in this game, it'll start to build. You know, you start thinking about, oh man, like, you know, we're down here, we're gonna have to go home for game. Like, there's no comfort in going home for game 7. Like, that game 7 pressure can start in game 6, and it's sort of on the Clippers to put it on.
You know, it's interesting. Not only has Paul performed bigly, but Paul, I love that word. Milwaukee, Giannis is hurt. I think the Clippers are better than Atlanta. If the Clippers won this series without Kawhi and then got to the finals without Kawhi, I think they're the best team. And it is interesting. Paul could not only shed that label, he could burst through it. Is there any possibility that Kawhi would play even if the Clippers got to the finals?
I mean, it's so hard to know. You know, I think the Kawhi injury sort of secrecy is very predictable. And it's very real. I think the extent of his injury is to people outside of like that main circle is pretty unknown. And I'm not in that main circle, and virtually no one is. I mean, that's sort of the mythicism of Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, as he goes into free agency, one of the things that the Clippers have kind of sort of promised to him along the way was that they would take his medical and his privacy both very seriously. And kudos to them. They've stuck to their word. You know, I mean, I think they could be out there right now saying, you know, this guy needs to be on the court and stuff like that in an effort to pressure him. That wouldn't bode well for them moving forwards in an effort to try to re-sign him. I think they could be doing the same on the opposite. And mostly they've just not talked about it. And I think that's sort of, you know, you talk about how star players kind of inject their culture onto the organization that they're at. The Clippers have been, you know, really over the last decade as they've become competitive, sort of a blank slate for superstars to come in and just sort of like, we'll listen to you. We'll defer to you.
Yeah.
They have deferred to Kawhi Leonard on this. And I think as they say, the silence speaks volumes, right? Like, that's just sort of, they're doing what Kawhi says. And look, there might be a chance that he returns. I think they should proceed as if that he's not going to. That should just be sort of the thing. And Colin, here's a weird thing too, just kind of watching these Clippers through this playoff run. Not everybody is maybe built to be a complimentary player.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen Paul George sort of fail in that role a few different times. And just right now, and I'm not saying the Clippers are better without Kawhi Leonard on the court. That's crazy. But Paul George might be a little better, and he might be a little more comfortable.
Yeah.
And he looks very comfortable right now.
Hey, listen, Damian Lillard wants out. You got there's a lot of things out there. Ben Simmons, Dame Lillard. It's not the craziest thing to think. We got a very strong draft. Draft picks mean a lot. The Warriors have a couple. I think the Warriors next year could end up having a Pascal Siakam, Clay, Steph. You got it. You know, I think the one thing interesting, Dan, about the West, LeBron and AD with a long off season are going to come back healthy. The Warriors with 2 great draft picks and Wiseman, who's a weird fit for them, are going to come back profoundly different and probably better. If you're the Clippers, you know, you cannot. I guess my point is, you can't rest in the West. I think if this team got to the finals without Kawhi, and they won the finals without Kawhi, wouldn't you at least have a talk about it? 10 minutes
about what? About moving on from Kawhi?
I mean, I don't know. Like, are we absolutely?
I don't think so.
Oh, you don't think so?
No, I don't. I mean, I think.
Would you trade him for Dame?
No, I wouldn't. No, I mean, I think like, and look, and we can go back to the sort of the end of the Dallas series for why you wouldn't, you know, when they kind of, it was sort of return on investment was right there for them, Colin, right? Where you've got a guy, playing with Shaquille O'Neal level efficiency, doing it, you know, from 17 feet away. and just dominating it. And the ultimate trump card in every series, the ultimate sort of adjustment is like, you got a player that's going off, we're going to throw Kawhi Leonard at you. And we've seen it work against Giannis. It worked at times, certainly against Luka. It was working in the Jazz series, you know, and he just gets bumped in the air, steps the wrong way, and sort of we are where we are. You know, and it's not dissimilar to what happened to Milwaukee. It's not dissimilar to eventually what happened to the Lakers. I mean, that is definitely a part of this game, and durability certainly matters. But if you're the Clippers and you're talking about the best chances that you have to win and kind of maximizing championship windows, because, you know, look, Steve Ballmer would love one banner. I don't think one title is going to satisfy a guy like him. I think if he gets a taste of it, I think he's going to want more. Certainly, I think Kawhi Leonard is your best bet.
All right.
It doesn't come without risk, certainly, but I think it's your best bet.
Yeah. It's just weird. I mean, nobody knows his injury.
Yeah.
I mean, every other injury, I know what it is an hour later.
One person. Yeah, two people, Kawhi and his doctor.
It's crazy. Dan, great seeing you again.
All right, Colin, be good. Have a great week.
Yeah. You know, Kawhi is such an enigma. Like, I don't even, who knows what his injury is? Like, it's just so much secrecy around. Like,
it's very strange. I wonder, you know, traditionally in sports, we are very out there with what players' injuries are and what's going on with them physically. And, you know, we have injury reports before games and stuff like it's. We don't treat athletes how we would treat anyone else when it comes to their medical information. And I do wonder if that's changing a little bit, because we didn't really know what was going on with Chris Paul either.
I don't know. I just think about this. The Clippers win tonight. Game 7, you'd have to think they could beat Phoenix. And then they go and play Milwaukee without Giannis, or Atlanta, and they win without Kawhi. Now, I'm not saying Kawhi has got an option to leave. What I'm saying is, it's like, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be a lot of good players on the market. If I said this yesterday, I would choose Kawhi over Dame, but it's way closer than you think. If Kawhi left, if I told you today, Kawhi leaves, Dame comes back, are they worse? Because like Kawhi, Paul George gives me 90% of what Kawhi gives me. Are they that much worse?
No, Dame gives you something
you're not even close to accomplishing.
No, I agree. It's very close, extremely close, but Kawhi did win two championships.
I know. He's a weird guy to build a culture around, though. He's an interesting cat. Dame, Paul George, I can build a culture around that. Those guys are talkers.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're incredible players, and Dame is an like all-time great offensive player. Kawhi's won two championships.
I know, but it's different when you build the culture around him.
I don't know. I am a Kawhi guy.
Yeah, I think I am too, but it's odd. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
So LeBron's changing his number from 23 to 6 next season.
To sell jerseys.
Yeah, I think it has a little something to do with the
movie?
Space Jam. Right. Yes. Which I think we have to sit you down and make you watch the first Space Jam. You know, you're not a sports movie guy.
I'm not like a cartoon guy either. Like,
no?
Well, I mean, The Simpsons.
I don't know that. I've seen Space Jam 500 times. But I'm expecting this Space Jam to be completely different than the original.
I've only ever watched one sports movie I love, and it's a hockey movie, Miracle. That's it.
You have not seen a lot of sports movies. Like, you're not a sports movie guy.
I'm a true crime.
Yeah.
I just watched Mayor of Easttown.
Oh, yeah, I heard that's very good.
It's very dark. It's very good, and it's very heavy, but it's fantastic. Kate Winslet is unbelievable.
You know what I finished? Ted Lasso.
Oh, you finished it?
I finished it.
It's fun.
It's amazing. It's a masterpiece. It's every emotion. It made me so happy. It was recommended to me by a million people, and it was absolutely
joyful. It makes you happy.
It does make you happy.
It's innocent. There's an innocence to it.
Because I finished Schitt's Creek, and I was like, I need something. I need a show. I'll watch like I'm watching Breaking Bad now. I never watched Breaking Bad, so that's the show I'm watching right now. But I like finished Schitt's Creek. I need a happy show too. Like, By the way, I just need a happy show.
That's Anne's favorite show.
Schitt's Creek?
All time.
Dan Levy,
she thinks it's...
Yeah, it's amazing.
By the way, the woman in that show, the comedic actress...
Yes.
Why am I forgetting her name?
Oh, Catherine O'Hara?
Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah.
is one of the 10 funniest people on the planet.
She's brilliant.
And literally one of the 10 funniest people on the planet.
She definitely is. She was absolutely brilliant. We have completely derailed. But anyway, he is not going to change his, Anthony Davis is not going to change his jersey. He wore 23 in New Orleans, but he's going to stick with 3 as a Laker. And the reason is because he wants them to retire the number 3 jersey when his career is over.
Oh, that's nice. All right.
I say dream big.
Well, try to play half the games.
I say dream big. No. Why not? You know what? Aim for the stars, right?
Sure, you bet.
So Donovan Mitchell is the centerpiece of the Jazz franchise, but Dwayne Wade, who joined the team's ownership group this season, is allegedly worried about his future there. He's reportedly concerned that Mitchell's desire to stay about his desire to stay in Utah long term. Now, Donovan Mitchell does have a $195 million extension that kicks in next season, so he'd have to force his way out if he did want to leave.
Well, he and Gobert have never been close, but it seemed to work okay this year, didn't it?
Well, yeah, I think so. But this is a little interesting. So he can hit free agency in 2025 if he declines his player option on the final year of his extension. And Gobert also received a 5-year max contract in December. But the interesting thing about this story to me is, while Donovan may, like, there's this might be an anxiety about him leaving, what do the Jazz need that, like, they don't have win?
They need one athletic wing. They will draft that. They could acquire that. But they're not that far off. They've got their rim
protected.
They're
a well-run organization. They have a good coach. They have a 3-time defensive player of the year. They have the 6th man of the year. They have Mike Conley. They have Bogdanovich. You guys got to do some winning. Before you start talking about forcing your way out, to go where? What else do you need?
Yeah, they could use, I don't know the contract situation, they could use like a Terrence Mann, because the Clippers have Kawhi, Paul George, and Terrence Mann in the wing. If you could give them like a Terrence Mann who's not great, but he has talent, they need a wing, an athlete to defend on the wing and hit a 3 on the wing.
I don't know. I think they need to crank off the excuse machine is what I think.
All right.
Need. Like, Ooh. We give the Jazz a lot of runway, because who wants to, you know, talk bad about the Jazz? Like, it's the Jazz. They're always good. But that's my point. Like, okay, like, what are we talking about? Where is he forcing his way out to? They have a great roster. Maybe they need an extra piece. But, like, they've lost in the first round, 2018-19 season, last year, and then they lost in the second round to the Clippers this year with the 3-time defensive player of the year in the last 4 years and the 6th man of the year and Donovan Mitchell. Like, I don't know. I think it's just time to start doing some serious winning there.
All right.
I don't know. Am I being too hard on Utah?
No, I mean, I think the West is hard. I think the Western Conference is the SEC in football. If you're the 3rd best team in the SEC, you're often the 4th best team in the country.
Well, I'm not saying that they should settle to not try and get better.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much more they'd like. You can't look at that roster and be like, yeah, there's a huge hole.
They would
here.
Win the. I think they'd win the East.
Yes.
I think Utah would win the East. I just think this is like the SEC. They feel like Georgia football in the SEC. You're like, oh, they're great. Yeah, but they're not LSU. They're often not Florida. They're not Auburn. They're not Alabama.
They're just kind of becoming the team that, like, okay, like, I've heard enough about all that system and how great, like, it's time to start doing some winning. So Penny Hardaway was reportedly in the running for the Magic head coaching job after interviewing with the team last week. However, he announced he's going to be staying at Memphis. He's been with the team for 3 seasons. They went to the NIT championship last season, won. And Memphis is also reportedly going to hire Hall of Famer Larry Brown as an assistant coach.
I like that.
Which I think is a great move.
He's smart consultant.
Hall of Famer, legends. And I think what Penny's been able to do with the Memphis program is amazing. Like, he's done an incredible job recruiting.
Well, you knew he'd be a good recruiter. He's a personable guy. He was a star. You knew he could recruit, but...
But he's also done a great job coaching.
Yeah,
they're 3-32 since he's been there.
Yeah, they win games.
Yeah. And I love
Larry
Brown.
I love that story.
Yeah.
And he was a great player who became a good coach. Like, it's different. Mostly Magic tried to coach. It didn't work.
No, it doesn't. The transition doesn't work for everybody.
But he was a great player and he's a great coach.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
That's a segment. How many great players have become great coaches? That's a segment in itself. That's rare. You do not get that.
No, it's not always the easiest
They make
transition.
Bad GMs and bad coaches most
or
of the time.
Or really great ones. Like, it can really go either way.
Yeah.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Hushmanzada, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hot water that never runs out. Tanklessmadesimple.com. Ask for Navien. Okay, we're going to play a game here. We talk about this all the time in the NBA, the confusion between who's a one and who's a two.
Yes.
Now, here's my qualifications for what makes a one. You rely on they're reliable mentally and physically.
Okay.
That's why Kyrie drives me nuts. I don't know what I get physically or mentally. They're the best player on a title team. Other good players on the team, including all-stars, often defer to them late in games. So like when Paul defers to, you know, if he plays for a Team USA, like that's the ultra alpha. Like when Bird was deferring to Michael, it's like that's the ultimate alpha. And also, you're a winning player. Some guys are talented. They're not winning players. So we're going to play, well, I don't know what it's called.
One or two. That's what it's called.
All right. It's called one or two. Are they a one or a two? Here we go.
Is Joel Embiid a one or a two?
All right. They're plus 121 when he's on the floor and minus 31 when he's not. And because Ben Simmons is not reliable, he has to carry a much greater percentage of this team's success. So I feel he's a one. The injuries scare me to death, but I think he has the mentality of a one. He's got the physicality of a one. I think he shows up in big spots like a one. He's a one.
Is Kevin Durant a one or a two?
Kevin's a one. I don't like him in that uniform, by the way. I hate that uniform. First of all, he has the highest career scoring average of all active players. He averages 30 a game in the playoffs. So, by the way, he played the minutes. He gave you the games. He was great in the fourth quarter. So I thought, even as he lost last year, I thought it was a great series for him. It was like, wow. Off that Achilles injury?
Yeah.
I think Kevin's a one. Absolutely.
Is James Harden a one or a two?
I think James is a two. I think his style, where he needs the whistle, does not play well in the postseason. You can't be just a great regular season player and be a one. He's a great regular season player. He needs a whistle. You don't get it in the postseason. I don't get a ton on the defensive end. Kevin Durant will give you a defensive effort. He feels like I need somebody. I think Kevin 1, Harden 2 can win a title. But I think Harden would defer to Kevin late in games.
Is Giannis a 1 or a 2?
He's absolutely a 2. Now, Middleton's not a 1, so don't even go there. But I don't trust him late in games. And that's really what it comes down to. If I don't like it with 6 minutes to go in the NBA games, I mean, let's remember, outside of 3 feet, he's 34% from the field. And stop telling me he's going to become a shooter. It's getting worse.
Is Trae Young a 1 or a 2?
It's really early. But everything I see is a 1. First of all, he distributes, so he makes people better. Number two, he takes big shots.
Mm-hmm.
He's great on the road. Like, there's a Reggie Miller quality here. He loves to be the villain. Even LeBron didn't like to be the villain. So I like the fact that he'll take the big shot. He doesn't shoot nearly as well as Dame or Steph, but he doesn't care. He'll take the shot. He elevates teammates. He's great on the road. He doesn't shrink in big games. I think he's a one.
How about Jimmy Butler?
You know, I like Jimmy, but he's starting to feel like a two. Is he actually has never been a great shooter. There's a little bit of Dwayne Wade here. He can be a number one on a really, really young team. But I feel for Jimmy Butler to win a title, he's got to be a two. He had the lowest shooting percentage by any player in the postseason. It's a Dwayne Wade situation. On Miami, he's a one. But if KD was on this team or one of the great players, he, I think, would be your two.
Jason Tatum, one or a two?
This is very difficult. This one I struggle with. I think I may be wrong. I have him as a two. And I'm not sure I'm right on this. Bill Simmons could come on. I'll give Bill Simmons the floor to argue. He is talented. I am not disputing that.
Of course.
He offensively, he does a lot of things a one does. But they lost in five games to the Nets. They weren't overly competitive. Here's where I struggle. He was very good in the fourth. I may revisit this. I may regret this. I would have said it too. Best two in the league.
Sure.
He's the second best two in the league. I'll get to the best two later.
By the way, being a two is not an insult.
No, he's the second best two in the league.
Is Bradley Beal a one or a two?
He's a two, and I'll tell you why. And I like Bradley Beal. But the fact that he has not forced his way out of Washington tells me his mentality is he's happy making money and scoring points. Ones, LeBron wouldn't stay there. Durant wouldn't stay there. I don't think Steph Curry would stay there. If you're staying with that organization, that's telling me I'm satisfied where I'm at.
Donovan Mitchell.
I think he's a one. I think he defends. I think he plays hard. I think he demands a lot from his teammates. He's okay making Rudy Gobert mad. I like his mentality, a one.
Chris Paul.
He's a one, not a huge score. Who does Booker defer to late? In the huddle, who does Booker defer to? Who does this team defer to with a minute and a half to go? That's a one. It's not all scoring. The team defers to him. Booker defers to him in big moments. In the huddle, on the floor, on the defensive end, with the ball.
So that makes Devin Booker a...
two. Devin's still got a way to go. He's got to improve his passing. He's got to improve his defense. The Clippers went right after him. He's a great two. He's not as good as Tatum. Jason Tatum's a better player right now than Booker by a little bit.
How about Jokic, one or two?
He's a one. He first of all, plays every game, plays hard, scores, makes everybody better, best passing big in the league. He's a one.
Kawhi Leonard.
The best two in the game. I'm sorry, he's the best two. Jason Tatum's the second best two. I cannot depend on him physically. I cannot depend on him emotionally. He's hurt. Nobody knows what it is. It's too weird to me. I can't build my franchise around him.
Paul George.
Very good, too, for obvious reasons. He has struggled in a lot of big clutch situations, but he's a good, too. All right, I got a bunch of others, but we ran out of time. That segment is so good.
We have a lot more.
I shortchanged it.
Well, maybe we'll do it tomorrow. We got another show to do tomorrow.
Yeah. Nothing like getting the segments done the day before. You know, I'm lazy enough. All right, good stuff, everybody. We will see you tomorrow. Speak for yourself. Biz coming up next.